So I could hear comments from people from all sorts walks of life who would respond to this really amazing result by saying that the Turkish people is stupid. Mm. And I've seen the same thing happen in Greece before, the same has happened elsewhere. Now, I think that if you're a politician or anyone who is interested in politics and base your analysis of an election result on the ground that the population is stupid, you should change profession. The same is true, I think, for historians. If you base your assumption on the fact that no matter what you have presented to colleagues or to the public debate, people have not wished to follow, they have not wished to accept, they have rejected, they have ignored, whatever. And if your conclusion is that they are not worthy your attention, they're stupid, and there is no way that there's a breakthrough, this stalemate, again, I feel that there is something wrong with your own perception of your role in the public sphere. We have had a discussion recently following the screening on a TV channel, a private TV channel in Greece, of a documentary on the Greek Revolution, 1821. And it was the first time that the documentary, which was very well done, technically, I mean, and it was prepared by professional historians, very well respected in Greece. It was the first time that such a production attempted to review certain stereotypes and publicly accepted ideas about the Ottoman past, about the revolution and everything. This triggered a scandal, an uproar. For weeks, in the middle of the worst economic crisis since the Second World War, everyone was discussing this documentary. I'm not getting into the details, but there are two things that are important. First, equally to what I told you about Turkey a minute ago, history and our understanding of history of the past is always relevant to politics, and it can concern everyone, and not only historians and politicians. And second, when people who have a kind of organic relation to a regime or to what we call the establishment, certain institutions, decide to speak out, to use their prestige, their social prestige, their institutional prestige, and make the audience understand that what others have argued against the master narrative might not be an act of treason. It might contain elements of the truth. This can shake overnight the way that a whole society has perceived itself based on a particular understanding of the past. And this happened in Greece. Of course, this also relates to and resonates to the crisis, because it has turned to a kind of existential crisis about what are we, what is wrong with our nation, what is wrong with our social structures, what is wrong with our recent past. So this came as a kind of, the timing was perfect, as the challenge that would make this self-criticism explode. And it did, to various ways. But my point is that you need people with a particular intellectual prestige to do that. You and I do not belong to this club. Okay, we are marginal when it comes to social prestige. And we can be easily described and targeted as enemies, as weird people. And this has happened to historians. I mean, a few years ago there was a similar debate in the media for the first time in 2007. Historians became a visible category of people. So there will be people, historians, colleagues, that is, on the TV news, and they would be described not anymore as university professor, which was the good way, because this gave you a certain social prestige, but as historians. And suddenly, people realize that there are people who are called historians, who call themselves historians, but they behave in a very weird manner. They are telling us things very different from what we used to know, especially from our school education. So it has become a new social category. I'm sure that there are similar cases everywhere, but building a social prestige, building a social capital, is difficult for historians alone, or for sociologists alone. There, it's exactly where you need politicians, members of academias, national academias, which are by default more traditional than what you can expect from scholars, you see. So it's how you, what part of the institutional structure will be available to support, to endorse some of these vilified notions and ideas.
So maybe on along these lines, you could talk a bit about how you think we should be training the next generation of historians. I mean, what is your strategy for graduate and or undergraduate training? What are the main things that you want people to leave with?
When I spent a year in Berlin and I became more familiar with the German academia, I realized, and the same is true of course for other academias, I realized that they still put a very, very strong emphasis on languages. And also there is still a very, not strict anymore, but still fading out but existent distinction between those who pursue historical research, the historians, and the rest of the people who are described as orientalists. So if you work on European history, you are by default, or American history, you are by default a historian. But if you work on Ottoman history, the history of the Middle East, because you need to learn Ottoman or Arabic or other languages, then you have to be accepted to the group of historians. You have to prove yourself. So this is something we haven't discussed so far, but it brings me to your question. It is still very important, it has become obvious that it's always very important for any historian, any graduate student or any professional in the field to be accomplished in a technical manner so that he or she can use sources, material, from different origins, which, as in your case, someone who comes from a very different academic and cultural background and decides to learn Turkish and probably Ottoman. It was partly my case as well, and there are other people who do that. So this very firm knowledge, solid knowledge of languages, sources, is always part of our profession, and there is no way that we can just give away our expertise. But when it comes to our way of engaging to society and the broader questions, there I have become much more liberal than I used to be. And I believe that at the very same time, we have to train ourselves and our students to ask questions who have first a broader meaning, a meaning for people beyond the academia and the particular discipline. And second, to be able to listen and to follow and to very quickly dismiss or accept information and attitudes, not on the ground of validity and veracity with respect to our profession, but on the ground of validity with respect to whom they represent. So they have to be more sensitive. They have to be trained. I think we are all trying to train ourselves to be more sensitive to what we receive, not to what we
produce,
to what we receive from outside, from the society, this vast amount of information, and categorize it almost instinctively. And this is something that you only learn by experience. There is, I hope I'm able to offer to my students a kind of guideline with respect to what is important, what is not important. But it's only through experience, going out there, we have become a kind of anthropologists, if you haven't realized that. That's how I feel. Having more and more to deal with stimuli from outside, from the outside world, it's not our job, it's not just to work in an archive and in a library anymore, and reflect all these stimuli and see how this will improve our understanding of the past eventually. This kind of politicized historian, which is not, of course, a new concept, goes back to the 60s and the 70s, but back then at least they didn't have the internet. And I guess things might have been more structured. Now they are not. We are struggling to find, to create a new structure about what to accept and what to reject. But at least what is important is that we are not by default and out of conviction reject the production of historical knowledge outside the field. We don't have the right to do that. Now, how do you keep this balance? I don't have a recipe for that. But I cannot see myself, or I wouldn't like to see my students feel contempt for anything that it's not scholarly when it comes to historical production.
So, in your own case, what is the next thing that you want to do, or what is, let's say, on the near horizon, or the, let's say, the 5 to 10 year plan?
One thing that brings me back to opening up my study and my focus from Izmir to the other port cities that I told you. This is one of the lines I'm planning to pursue in the future as well. So, delving more and more into the specificities of urban life. So I'm moving in a way towards urban life. In this particular context, the late Ottoman imperial context. But moving from discussions that involve the elites, that involve nationalism, and the strifes around the integrity of the empire and the aggressive character of the nation states, moving from there into more less discussed, less obvious aspects of social life. I should tell you that I'm fascinated by new trends in the fields, which of course follow similar trends everywhere, which focus on gender, which focus on the kind of marginal groups of all sorts in that play an important role within urban life, but they become very difficult to trace because of obvious reasons. So I can see myself trying to again trivialize the urban phenomenon by bringing into the picture or following the work of others who bring into the picture these aspects which still need to be studied. That's one thing. But the other is to try and look deeper into personal relations I have developed throughout my dissertation, the study for my dissertation, and ever since, an obsession with the importance of family networks and other kinds of networks, social networks, on the way that politics is pursued. And it's always such a pleasure to find out who is a friend to whom when it comes to ideological convergence. And I think that this aspect has still, I mean, there is a lot of work to be done with respect to this. And that's also what I find important. But on the other hand, as I told you, I allow part of myself be open to more current discussions and respond accordingly to discussions on how this or that aspect of the Ottoman life or the Ottoman society is perceived. So in this respect, I cannot formulate my own agenda. I can give it a theoretical base, but I cannot give it a content, and let it be that this content will be provided by the needs of the society itself. This, I know it might look risky and also not fitting to the notion of discipline, but I take the risk.
Well, we'll look forward to reading the products of that risk. Thank you so much. This was excellent, and I hope that we meet either here or on our side again.
It was my pleasure. I'm really be glad to have you around more and more here in Istanbul.
Well, good. Well, let's keep up the contact. So, thank you so much.